Interview with Dr. Vilho Schiwether, a lecturer at the Department of Geography, History and Environmental Studies at the University of Namibia in Windhoek. Interview conducted by Dirk Henriksen in Basel, 28th August 2015. Dr. Vilho Schiwether is once again a guest in Basel. You obtained your PhD in 2010 from the University of the Western Cape in South Africa on a rather difficult topic. Mm-hmm. Your PhD bears the title Enduring Suffering, the Kasinga Massacre of Namibian Exiles in 1978 and the Conflicts Between Survivors, Memories and Testimony. You continue to do research on this and related topics. I also learned that you have moved into research on the return of human remains, for example, from Germany to Namibia. It's a pleasure to have you here in Basel once again. You have come to Basel with Namibian students and a colleague from the department in order to open tonight an exhibition on the history of the central Namibian town of Usukos. We might talk later about this. The purpose of this interview is to get an insight into some of your perhaps even more personal experiences with regard to researching Namibian history. Why, if I may ask, have you become a Namibian historian?
Yeah, thank you, Doug. Thank you for welcoming me to Basel. I think, yeah, I'm a historian as we speak now. I did my master's in history with the University of Western Cape, as you have said. And I think that could not have been possible without the assistance of this foundation here. When I was doing undergraduate studies, I was more into geography, but because of the funds that I got from here, I got encouraged to study history, in particular the history of Namibia liberation struggle, because for me that is I think very close to my heart, and it's something I think that is very painful, because the way Namibia has handled the history of Namibia liberation struggle is quite disappointing, because not much has been done to collect memories and testimonies of what people experienced inside and outside Namibia. I decided to take this research on Kasinga. It's very difficult, it's quite emotional, as you said, but I decided to do it, to create a platform for the people who went through it, who experienced it, because they live with these traumatic memories, but they are not opening up, there's silence on it. Though they want to speak, but I think there's no channel through which they can make their voices heard.
Perhaps briefly explain the sort of, let's say, drama and catastrophe which is sort of labeled the Kasinga massacre.
Kasinga is an event that has been contested right from the beginning. There are two narratives here. The SWAPO official narrative that says that Kasinga was a Namibian refugee camp, which is also supported by most of the survivors of that event. And there is another narrative by the South Africans who attacked Kasinga, that it was SWAPO headquarters, military headquarters, SWAPO stronghold. And the purpose of attacking it was to destroy SWAPO military infrastructure. And I think that narrative is still pursued by the South Africans, and there are many of them who still believe in it, that it was a military camp. And they continue to publish and write narratives and tell stories worldwide, trying to convince the world that their narrative is right, kind of, you know. And I think that's what's the narrative that is commonly read, because I mean, from the Namibian perspective of Kasinga, that it was the Syrian camp, nothing is coming out, nothing is going public. As I said in the beginning, that the miscandling is the silence, and there's only one official kind of, you know, a narrative of SWAPO. That is only, you know, giving one statement, you know, but it's not allowing, for example, the survivors themselves to speak as individuals, to speak from individual experiences. So there's this kind of, you know, collective, official narrative. And I think the government wants everybody to understand Kasinga from that perspective. But it's not the case with individual survivors, for example. When you engage them in dialogue, you listen to stories and individual stories, which I think the government is not kind of, you know, making public.
Why is there this silence? Is it possible to explain silence? Yeah. And is it possible to explain this particular silence? Or how do you construct what you name silence?
Yeah. No, it's quite difficult to explain. But maybe I think it's something that goes back to the time of the liberation struggle. Because most of these people, they were brought up in SWAPO, where I think they did not really have a voice, kind of, no, they could not say things independently without the approval of the party. You know, that was the nature of the liberation struggle. And I think it's something that they have accumulated. It has become a culture part of them. And they kind of know, you know, think that the government, you know, which is SWAPO, speaks to them, kind of, you know. So yeah, I would like to look at it from that perspective, kind of, know. Yeah.
So how could you conduct research and speak to survivors in that space of silence?
Yeah, it's also difficult, for example, getting these victims, you know, tell their stories. Because for them to tell you their stories, then you should kind of know, create a sort of trust from them. Without that trust, then they will not talk. And I mean, what creates that trust is that, for example, when I started with these interviews, I had to go through the SWAPO party office that had to issue me with an official letter, okay, that I had to produce to my interviews. And without that official letter, then it becomes very difficult, quite problematic for them to speak out. And I think for my side, it was also kind of not helpful, because I also grew up in the liberation struggle. Some of these people are known to me when we were in exile. I also used to broadcast a radio program about how people remember past violence. So kind of now I was known to many people, and when I approached them that I want to interview them about their experiences of Kasinga, I didn't have much problems. But if it were another person, I think, who is not known to them, kind of, now then it becomes a problem. But that does not mean that these people do not want to speak. They want to speak, but there's fear that if they speak, maybe there will be, you know, such kind of, you know, fear. I think that uh, kind of maybe generated from, you know, the time of the liberation struggle also, kind of, you know, yeah.
And this fear and this silence, is that also connected to the mythologization of the event, the myths that developed and which you mentioned at the beginning, or not at all?
Yeah, I think I would like to believe so, because, as I have said before, survivors as individuals, I think they have understand Kasinga from an individual perspective, and to some extent this individual understanding of Kasinga, individual seeing of Kasinga, might not necessarily, you know, talk to the Swapo narrative. And I think they is fear, because they do not want really to be seen or to be heard in the public as speaking a different language from the official narrative of Swapo. Because, I mean, kind of, these are also people, I mean, who grew up Swapo, and I think they are quite sympathetic to Swapo. They are supportive of Swapo, and they don't want to see themselves, I mean, to be heard speaking a different language.
Are there silences and fears amongst the perpetrators?
I don't think so, because I think listening to them speaking and reading their narratives, they have no fear, and I think that's where the problem is, because these people, they are not remorseful. They still in denial. They are not apologetic, and they have not acknowledged that civilian lives were lost in Kasinga. So they speak independently, and I think that is quite traumatic to the victims, because hearing these people still stuck in the past, denying the Kasinga massacre, and on the other hand, we talk about reconciliation, it's quite traumatic for them. And I think that's where really justice, I think, needs to be pursued. And one of the objectives of taking up that research is, I think, to pursue justice for the victims. Because you can't talk about reconciliation without anybody having come forward officially to apologize and to say what happened was a mistake. We are sorry, kind of, you know. Because, I mean, Namibia, we reconcile, kind of not a blanket reconciliation. But, I mean, many people ask, why do we reconcile? Okay, reconciling for what? So I think that is quite crucial, that these guys really, they should, you know, apologize. And I think maybe there should be a kind of what now? Of a kind of it should become kind of not illegal, that it is illegal, it is not permitted to deny the Kasinga massacre, you know, publicly, you know, something like that. I think it would help these other people. And if apology is not there, then there's also fear there that the trauma of Kasinga will be passed on to generations after generations. People will never get healed, and if they don't get healed, they pass on this to next generations, and we don't want to see that happening.